just for fun, while everybody's getting set, if you've got your iPhone, with you, somebody, I want a few of y'all to do what I just did. I just punched in define faith, and it depends on if it's Google or if it's Webster's or whatever. If you got your phone with you, a few of y'all, just punch that in. We're going to talk about that here in just a second. It's always interesting to me when we look at what the world thinks something is. I know when you go to Webster's, online at least, you have to decide if you want the noun or the verb of faith. And that kind of makes my point what I'm going to wind up saying today anyhow, but still, I just thought that was interesting. Before we start seeing what Webster and all them have to say, y'all tell me, give me a definition. What do you, before you necessarily look at it, tell me when you see somebody says, what is faith? What comes to mind, Brian? Put him on the spot like that. Okay. There's a verse, that we use a lot, isn't there? Or a statement to a hope in that which is what you can't put your hands on. All right, somebody else. What's your definition of faith? Okay. Now, is Brian's the noun or the verb? And is yours the noun or the verb? Yeah, his is a verb, his is a noun, isn't it? Brian's was a noun, DC's is a verb. Somebody else, definition of faith. Y'all know I like doing this on Sunday nights, right? So come on. Okay. Now, Kathy's grinning, and she can't see it because she's reading it, and I already read that. It does say, in its definition, is a belief in something that you don't have any proof about. So good. Somebody else. Jay, what did you find on yours? I noticed you had it up. I like that. I saw that on mine too. I kind of thought, on apprehensions and not proof. What they're trying to say is it's a belief in something or a trust in something that you can't put your hands on. It's not physical or tangible that you can say, okay, here's proof of it, huh? All right, somebody else. You have another? I almost had, while Brian was saying his, I almost able to pull back that sentence that we always talked about what faith was. Y'all remember? The hope of there you go. Keep going, Lee. The hope of substance of things not seen, but there's something else that goes with it. We'll have to think on that one. I can't remember it either. I was hoping one of y'all could. All right, let me ask you another question. How do we get it? How do we get faith? If it's the hope, of substance of things not seen, if it's, intangible, how do we get it? How do we get faith? Trust. That's a big word right there, isn't it? Trust. We have to trust. Okay, I think it's a gift. How else do we get faith? Do what? There you go. I was hoping, see, Brandy, when you came up and told me that earlier, you didn't think I was going to put you on. I was hoping you'd bring that up. It's through experience, too, isn't it? We've experienced that God is trustworthy. Okay? So how does God build our faith, then? Through experience. More experience. Like I said this morning, about 2.5 years ago, it was when I first just started filling in really here. I did this series on the six phases of faith. And it was really well received. And I hadn't really thought much about it again since then, but I literally in this last month, I bet you I've had 8 to 10 people talk, you know, and visiting, talk about, you know, what's going on in their lives or what's going on in the life of the church even, things like that. And it can really be explained when we understand and remember the 6 phases of faith that God puts us through. Now, my other question is, and here's a big one to decide if we're going to continue on with this series or not. How many of y'all remember what those 6 phases were from 2.5 years ago? Good. I always hate to go back and do something that as I'm going through it, everybody goes, I remember all this. So I'm glad. So we're gonna look at it again. We're gonna look at the 6 phases of faith. Matthew chapter 9, verse 29. By the way, does everybody have a paper? I'm sorry. DC usually makes sure everybody had it tonight. And Matthew 9:29 says, "According to your faith, it will be done unto you." According to your faith, it will be done. Mark 9:23, everything is possible for the person who has faith. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. I don't know, but from those 2 verses, it sounds to me like faith's pretty important. How about y'all? And according to how much of it we have is what's going to happen to us. According to your faith, it shall be done unto you. Faith, in all the definitions that y'all gave, were very good definitions, by the way. Faith is like a muscle, isn't it? What happens if you just don't ever use a muscle? It gets weak. Pretty soon atrophy. Thank you. Atrophy. And it won't work, will it? But what happens if every day you work that muscle? It gets stronger. It gets bigger. That's the whole idea behind bodybuilding, isn't it? And weightlifting and all that. You're building up a muscle. You're tearing it down, and it's repairing, and it's building up. Faith is just like a muscle. If you don't ever exercise it, your faith is going to be pretty weak, isn't it? Your trust is going to be pretty weak. But if you exercise it constantly, it's just going to get stronger and stronger and stronger. And we're going to look at about 4 or 5 guys through this, looking at this little series, that at points in time in their life, they didn't exercise that muscle. But then God moved in their lives or spoke to them or you know, came to them with different, each of these came, had received it a little bit different. And they began working that muscle. And it grew to be where a lot of people, you know, we look at it in the scripture now and we think, my goodness. You know, Noah, for example. We're going to look at Noah. I want y'all to know, the more I dig into Noah's life, the more I am impressed with Noah. You know, I never really realized until I dug into it a little bit, it took him 120 years to build that boat. How much criticism do you think he got in that 120 years? How much razzing do you think he got from his neighbors in that 120 years? Every day. You know, besides the fact that they're going to come to him, I mean, can you just imagine if all of a sudden somebody here in Kahoma just started building a boat out in their front yard? Well, the only problem is this thing wouldn't fit in a front yard, would it? But he'd have to start building that on the football field. Just imagine the amount of faith that it took. I mean, we just can't conceive that. That's more than our lifetimes, you know, nowadays, isn't it? And that's how long it took him to build this thing. I think he exercised that muscle pretty good in that 120 years. How about y'all? And so we're going to look at how God builds our faith. If you understand it, well, let me put it in the negative first. If you don't understand how God builds our faith, then while when in the process of him building it, we can get discouraged, we can give up, we can walk away. I guess pretty much everybody's Sunday school classes that's in here, that maybe other than Jaden, everybody was looking at Hebrews today. Is that right? Are we all on the same booklet in Hebrews? Okay. And it was talking about in Hebrews, in our Sunday school lesson, it was talking about the idea that the best idea about the reason for the book of Hebrews being written. Y'all remember what it said? DC or Guy or somebody else, any rusty ones that were teaching it today? Y'all remember what they said, why they thought they wrote the book of Hebrews? Yeah. And they were, he was kind of afraid they were going to be wandering off, wasn't it? That they might be giving up. Yeah. And that happens. I mean, that's a real possibility. And that's where faith comes in, isn't it? That muscle, the more you develop that muscle, the less likely you are to throw in the towel and give up. But I've known several people, and I bet you have too, that there was a time in their life they were faithful, they were serving, they seemed pretty strong in their faith. But then something happens, and literally they walk away from God. Now, I've known three or four ministers even. And you think, my goodness, how in the world did they do that? Well, I'll submit to you that more than likely, they didn't understand the phases of building their faith. They hit one of these phases, more than likely it was the, next to the last one or the middle one or whatever, that's not very fun. And they just said, okay, and I got this thing wrong. So that's why I think, and like I say, excuse me if as going through it you think, man, we don't really need to go through this again. I hope you don't feel that way, because I think it's important that we come back and we remind ourselves. And especially since I've had so many questions about it, that's just kind of where I went to with it. But we're going to look at what the six phases are tonight. And then in the next 6 weeks, six Sunday nights that we're here in here together, we're going to look at each one of those phases a little bit deeper. But tonight's just kind of an overview of what they are. Just to kind of get our minds going. So, yeah, and you know what? Even whatever bothers me even worse is a lot of times, and I don't know how to say this without it coming. Hopefully, I can say it the right way. It's, I've seen church members do it, but it really, really frightens me when ministers do it, because when they do it, they usually take members with them. They drag other people away from God as well. And that scares me, because I'm constantly looking and seeing where to whom much has been entrusted, much will be required, I feel like their day that they're going to stand before the Lord, I don't want to be in the same location when that happens, much less standing beside them. It does, and they go to these other religions, and no, you're fine. So let's look at them. First of all, the first stage one, is anybody remember what this one is? I want to keep checking to make sure y'all weren't fibbing to me, that you do remember this and you're just fibbing. Dream. The first stage is dream. God always starts with a dream. When he's going to build our faith, when he's going to make us exercise that muscle, he always, always, always starts with a dream. We have some pretty good examples of that. How about with Noah? God came to him and gave him the dream to build an ark. I promise you, Noah didn't come up with that by himself, did he? Noah wasn't laying in bed one time in the middle of the desert, 500 miles away from the closest body of water, and go, you know what, I think I might just build me a boat. God gave him that dream, that idea. Abraham is another one. God came to Abraham and told him, he said, I'm going to make you a father of a great nation. God gave him that dream. Joseph, he gave Joseph a dream. He was going to be the leader that would save his people. Nehemiah, God gave him a dream that he was going to go and be the one that built that wall, rebuilt the walls around Jerusalem. David, God gave him a dream about building the resting place, if you want to say that, or the house of God, about building a temple. God always starts with giving us a dream, because nothing ever happens if we don't first, if we don't dream it, if we don't envision it, if we can't see it. If it's not, if we can't get it in our mind that that's what we, something that we might need to do. There is probably not a community, and I can guarantee you there's not a church in any one of the communities today that didn't start with a dream, huh? Somebody had a dream. That they could start and build a family and build something in Howard County and in Kahoma and each of these communities. So it applies not only to those spiritual things; it's just a fact of life. Nothing happens if it doesn't start off with a dream. Look at this verse. Look at Ephesians 3:20. We always have this idea, we always want to know, well, how do I know if the dream is from me or if it's from God? And that's a valid question. That's a question that I get asked a good bit. Well, you know, I think I have this dream about what the church ought to be doing or what we could do or, you know, what they wanted to do as far as ministry. I get it a lot of different ways. And the question is always, well, how do I know if it's just me or if it's from God? Well, and I always send them to Ephesians 3:20. God is able to do far more than we would dare to ask or even dream of. Infinitely beyond our highest prayers, desires, thoughts, our hopes. What that verse tells me is, if it seems impossible, then that's a pretty good indicator it's from God, isn't it? If you know that you can't do it on your own, if it requires faith to do it, then you can understand that it's from God. A dream from God will always, always, always require faith. I mean, think about it. If we can do it on our own, and I don't mean this to sound sacrilegious, but what do we need God for? If we can do it in our own power, why would we think, you know, God cares about us and God cares about what's going on, but if we can do it, if we can envision it and we can do it and we can build it without God's help, then it doesn't take any faith to do it. The things that take faith are those things that we look at it, God gives us that vision. I mean, imagine, here's Abraham. Now, y'all help me here a little bit. I don't have this wrote down and I can't even remember how old I am most of the time. How old was Abraham when God came and told him, I'm going to make you the father of a great nation? Huh? Was he 90? 80? Okay, well, I think that's how he was close to 100 whenever Isaac was born, right? Yeah. My point is, like I said, I'm terrible. Y'all know that. I have to have Altie around just to make sure I remember how old I am to clarify me on that. So somebody else's is even worse. But my point is anybody here think that at age 80, 90, or 100, or whatever, that Abraham just went, you know what? I think now would be a good time to start a family. No. As a matter of fact, I love what one commentator was saying. Whenever he told Sarah, she laughed. Now, you know how we know that she laughed? That's what Isaac means, laughter. She thought it was a joke. She said, "You got to be kidding me. If it's a dream from God, it's going to take our faith for it to happen. It's bigger than what we can do. Then we know it's a dream from God." Everybody all right with that one? First stage is a dream. Nothing happens without first there being a dream about it. Here's the second one. The second D is it called the decision phase? The decision phase. We have to do something about the dream. I have read, I couldn't tell you how many stories about people who have things, they have great plans, they have these great diagrams, they have sketches of great paint, it could be great paintings, but they never become great because they never complete them. Same thing happens with you and I in God building our faith. He'll give us a dream, but then he'll tell us, okay, you've got to make a decision. Now, let me ask you all something. When this decision phase, do we generally have all the answers? No. Most of the time we don't, do we? Do you think Abraham had all the answers? When God said, "Listen, I'm going to make you a father of a great nation." He goes, "Okay, what I got to do?" He said, "Well, it's real simple. All you have to do is you have to leave. You have to leave the people that you're with, and you have to come over here and follow me." Abraham was at a decision phase, wasn't he? He had to go and pack up and leave, or he had to tell God, "Nah, I don't think that's going to work." There's always a decision phase. In that decision phase, and by the way, when we're making that decision phase, that's when faith is not a noun anymore. Now it's a verb, huh? It takes action. We got to do something about it. And what we have to do is really two things. I have it wrote down, and you've got blanks there. The two things we have to do is it involves an investment. Okay, you must invest. What does it say? Do what? Okay, you have to invest. You have to do to invest. Now, what do you have to invest? Well, you may have to invest time. Noah had to invest some time, didn't he? 120 years. You might have to invest some money. You might have to invest your reputation. But I can assure you, you're going to have to invest some energy. You're going to have to invest yourself doing something. God's not going to say, "Okay, here's the dream. Okay, now it's at the decision," and you go, "Okay, I'm all in, God," and you're still sitting in your easy chair, huh? It's got to become a verb. It's going to have an action to it, and that action is going to involve us investing something. I'm okay with that. I'll be honest with y'all. I'm okay with that. God wants to step out, wants me, different things that we face as a church or that I face just as an individual. I'm okay, God. Yeah, I'll put the time, money, reputation. But this second one is what's hard. We have to invest, but the second thing we have to do is we have to let go of security. We have to let go of security. I don't even remember where I heard it, but this always comes to my mind. If you want to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat. Have y'all heard that before? I don't even remember where it came from, but it sticks in my head. If you want to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat. This decision phase is always going to make us, we're going to have to make an investment, and we're going to have to let go of security. And I'm here to tell you, letting go of security is probably harder than the investing, isn't it? Some more examples. God spoke to Abraham and said, "Okay, I'm going to make you the father of this great nation." He gave him that dream. He got to that decision phase. And so God said, "Okay, I'm going to make you this father." Now what you have to do is you have to get up and leave your home. You have to leave your family, your extended family. You're going to have to leave the homeland that you've always been in. He had to get out of the, he had to get out of the boat and into the water, didn't he? How about Moses? Same thing. Moses was over there in the middle of nowhere. And God said, I'm raising you up. I want you to go and lead my people out of Egypt. That's the dream that I have for you. And Moses went, okay. No, he didn't. He put up a lot of argument, but he finally said, okay. And then God, and then he said, okay, what's next? And he goes, well, you got to go back. Now think about that for a minute. How excited do y'all think Moses was to go back to Egypt? Why? I mean, he'd been there. He grew up there. It was his hometown. Why didn't he want to go back home? That's right. They wanted to kill him. They ridiculed him. He was shamed while he was there. He was made fun of while he was there. And God says, okay, here's the dream. And after he convinced him that, yeah, it was really a dream from God, that's what God had in mind, he said, now I want you to go back to Egypt. I'm here to tell y'all, of all the stories, I think that might have been the hardest one. Now, there's probably, but that's equal. That had to have been hard. The reason I know that is because God's done it for me, and I bet he's done it for you. Whenever he wants to develop our faith, a lot of times he takes us back to those detours that we put to it in our life, didn't it? Those things that we went around instead of over, instead of conquering them, we skirted around them. Inevitably, God takes you back to that and go, you know, and you're not even thinking about that. But when you go, okay, yeah, I'll do that, God goes, good. Let's go back to this detour now. Y'all with me? Have y'all been there before? I have. And I want to go, okay, Lord, maybe I didn't understand this dream. I think I got the dream wrong. And he's going, no, you got it right. It always requires a decision, and we have to invest. And then also, like I said, we have to let go of security. Nehemiah was the same way. Nehemiah got a vision that he was going to go and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. I don't know how much you've dug into Nehemiah's life, but I want y'all to know something. Nehemiah had a cush job. Now, it wasn't the one that had the most longevity pay in it, but he was highly trusted. Anybody know what Nehemiah's job was before he went to go build the wall? What does that mean? He was the cupbearer. He just carried a cup around. Is that all he did? Yeah, he tasted everything that the king drank or ate before it got put in front of him. Well, guess what? If somebody wanted to kill the king, guess who got killed first? Nehemiah, right? So it wasn't, that's what I'm saying, it didn't have a lot of retirement benefits into the job. But what it did have is he was highly favored by the king. Trust me, if you're going to trust somebody to test your food before you eat it, to make sure your people aren't trying to kill you, you better have a close relationship with that person, right? And he did. So he had to leave that impressive position. I said a cush job, and that really wasn't the best description for it, but that position of power to go and do something that wasn't going to be easy. So you have to let go. If you're going to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat. And I'm here to tell you, sometimes that's the hardest thing in the world, isn't it, to get out of the boat. So the first one, you have a dream. Second stage is decision. Anybody remember the third one? Anybody got the third one figured out? Inevitably, it's delay. Inevitably, the third stage is always a delay. God will not fulfill that dream. He doesn't give you a dream one day and then fulfill it the next day, does he? Anybody experienced that? I haven't. there's always been a delay. And I always want to ask God, God, why the delay? See, that's one of my problems that as I was younger, especially, I was a lot like David with getting the Ark of the Covenant back to the city of to Jerusalem, the city of Zion. God spoke to him. The very next day, he went and built a cart, and boy, he went to where it was at. He went to the deacon's house and got where it was at, and they loaded it up. And as they were bringing it back, you know, it kind of shook and messed up. And who was it? Uzziah? Is that his right name? His right-hand guy touched it and got fried right there. He went back to God and he's like, God, what's the deal? My granddaughter's helping me a lot tonight, isn't she? The louder I get. Do y'all notice the louder I get, the louder she gets? He said, God, what's the deal? You gave me this dream, right? Yep. You told me that I needed to make a decision. Yep. All right, so what's the deal? And God said, you left before I got done. Y'all ever done that? Have you ever gotten in a hurry and left before God got finished talking to you about something? I have. Maybe if you haven't, you're lucky. But I've done it. But there's always this delay. Listen to what Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 3. God says, these things I plan won't happen right away. Slowly, steadily, surely, the time approaches when the vision will be fulfilled. So when you get in this phase 3, the word that always keeps coming up is we start asking when. When's it going to happen, God? All right, I got the dream and I've made the decision. Let's go. And God says, no, I'll tell you when it's time to go. We always get in a hurry. We hate waiting. Now, I see some of y'all looking at me, some of you are nodding your heads, and some of you are going, well, I don't mind waiting too bad. Really? Show of hands, how many of y'all enjoy waiting in a doctor's office? How many of you enjoy waiting at a traffic light? How many of you enjoy waiting, standing up, waiting to be seated at a restaurant? How many of you enjoy waiting even after you've been seated at a restaurant? You don't mind waiting for an hour or 2 hours for the waiter to come and take your order. Yeah, that's what I thought. We hate waiting. You know another reason I know that? Go down and walk down, and I don't do it very often, but go and walk down the grocery aisle and see how many instant whatever we have on our cupboard, in our store shelves nowadays. The one that always sticks in my mind, and it may not have ever been, but I remember seeing my mom used to use a thing that was called 3-minute rice. Is that right? Is that what it was called? 3-minute rice. I assume that when they first came out with that, it took 3 minutes for it to boil and it was rice. Is that why they called it 3-minute rice? But that's not quick enough for us anymore, is it? Now we got to microwave it. Now we got to have minute instant rice. Oatmeal. I mean, I could go on and on. We hate to wait. But God a lot of times says wait. Now, the question and what I started to say is why does he tell us to wait? Because it teaches us to trust him. It teaches trust in him. That seems to me like that was a part of the definition of faith, wasn't it? It's trust. It teaches us to trust God. Again, Noah, you're talking about waiting, the university of learning to wait. Noah waited 120 years. Abraham didn't have a child until he was 99. Moses waits for 40 years in the desert. Joseph, I couldn't even really put down a good thing about how many years he had to wait while he was in prison, but it was a bunch of years. You know, before he was in prison, before that dream came true. David, God goes and sends Samuel and he anoints him as the next king. And he gets to take over the throne, right? The next day, he spent years running, keeping Saul from killing him. He had to wait. How about Jesus? We don't always think about this. Jesus came to this earth knowing what he wanted, what God wanted him to do, right? He already had the dream. He still waited 30 years before he started the ministry that God had for him. So why does he do it? He wants to build trust. You really want to mess with your kids' heads, especially elementary, and then you get in junior high, it's even worse, and high school is even worse, is when they come and ask you about, can they do something? Tell them maybe. Don't tell them no. Don't tell them yes. Say maybe. See how excited they are about that answer. And we're not much better when we get to be adults, are we? It takes trust. One of the common things that starts happening here is we start doubting. When you're in that delay phase, you start wondering if you got it right, and we don't need to. Okay, the fourth one, fourth D, is difficulty. Not only do you have to wait, now there's problems while you wait. You say, where did you get that? Well, let's look at Moses' life. He waits 40 years to finally become the leader. The people had waited 400 years for him to become that leader. He finally becomes that leader. He goes to Egypt. Pharaoh finally lets him go, and he walks them out. And then what happens? No water, no food. They all start complaining. They start getting bit by poisonous snakes. Problem after problem after problem before the dream of them being in the promised land is realized. David, same thing. We said already, he's anointed king, and he spends the next several years being hunted down by Saul. Problem after problem after problem. Joseph, he has the dream of becoming the ruler. He says, okay, I'll do that. Good. He makes that decision. He gets sold into slavery. He's falsely accused of sexual assault. Not just assault, but sexual assault. And he languishes there, not knowing that for years, not knowing if anybody even knows where he's at. And then God finally raises him up, and he becomes what? I want to say he wasn't the number one guy, wasn't he? What, number two in the country? And then Noah. Like I said, the more I dig into Noah's life, the more I'm impressed. 120 years. And think of what all he went through in that 120 years. Every neighbor, I mean, even his kids were going, Dad, can you quit with the boat now already? You know, the whole neighborhood thinks you're a joke. Why don't you quit building the boat? But he never quit. Difficulty after difficulty. The other one that I got wrote down here is Joshua. You know, Moses is the one that's led him out of the wilderness, and done all this stuff, and dealt with all these problems, the Red Sea and the snakes and the complainers and everything. And finally, they're about to get to see it, right? They're about to get into the promised land, and Joshua takes over. And Moses dies, and Joshua takes over. We're going to go into the land, and what's the first thing that happens? I'll give you a hint. They send the spies over. And the spies come back and say what? There's giants in the land. Even Joshua had those issues. So why does God allow this? Look at 1 Peter 1, 6 through 7. Why does he allow the difficulties? At the present, you may be temporarily harassed by all kinds of trials, and this is no accident. It happens to prove your faith, which is infinitely more valuable than gold. We have this stage because God's proving. He's making that muscle grow more and more and more. Trust. Number five. You had to make a decision. You have delays. You got difficulties. And then number five comes along, and it's called dead end. The dead end stage. You finally, after all the problems, all the delays, everything else, and then it just looks like it's impossible. It's not ever going to happen. It deteriorates from difficult to impossible to hopeless to there's no way it's going to work. There's no way we're going to get this done. There's no way I can do this. Let's know what Paul said, 2 Corinthians 1, 8 through 11. Paul experienced this, is my point. At that time, we were completely overwhelmed. The burden was more than we could bear. In fact, we told ourselves this was the end. Anybody have any doubt? What were they at a dead end? Was Paul at a dead end? Yeah. Yet now we believe that we had this sense of impending disaster so that we might learn to trust not on ourselves, but in God. And then he adds to the last of that verse, who can raise the dead? We miss that a lot of times. Let me tell you something. You know why he put that on there? If God can raise the dead, is there anything he can't do? I mean, they were shipwrecked. They were bitten by snakes. They had all these things going on. But let me tell you something. If he can raise people from the dead, he can take care of all that, can't he? And that's what Paul was trying to say. Paul said, we got to this dead end so that God could show us and teach us to trust him. I think he does the same thing to you and I as well. There's not anything he can't do. If he can raise the dead, there's nothing. That's the ultimate, isn't it, of problems. Again, Abraham's situation, he said, I want you to be the father of a great nation. Waits until he's 99. Bible said really it had gone from difficult to impossible as far as Abraham was concerned, wasn't it? Now we know that. We're about to run out of time, but we know that because they tried to do it on their own, didn't they? And it messed up, didn't it? Let me give you another one to think about. The disciples had left everything. Jesus said, leave your boats, leave your families, lay down all your stuff, come and follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. And they had done it. You talk about developing their muscle. There came a day when they saw Jesus die on a cross, wasn't it? We already talked about Moses. Then that dead end gives way to the final one, and that is deliverance. Final one is finally deliverance. That's where that vision, that dream comes to life. We've achieved that dream. Now, like I said, we're gonna look at these a whole lot more, in detail. But as we do, I want you to be see where you find yourself at. Because I bet if you're going through something, you're gonna find yourself in one of those six stages. And just realize, and when we realize that it's God's steps. And it's a whole lot easier, and we don't ask the silly questions, don't we? We don't doubt God like that.